Well, I wonder if it was you that was in charge of rebuilding the city of Jerusalem, what would you do? We're talking about the days after the walls at Jerusalem had been rebuilt. What would you do if you were in Nehemiah's shoes to rebuild the holy city, because that's what it's called, in two verses in this chapter? And how would you build that holy city that is in great danger? How would you do it? How would you do it, rebuild that city in terms of the danger that it was in? Now, you might say in one sense that it was a safe city, that the walls had been rebuilt and there wasn't much danger, but we must remember that it wasn't that long ago that various people came up to attack them. Only in Nehemiah chapter 6 we saw that. So what would you do about it if you were in charge of rebuilding the city to ensure that at that dangerous time the people of God would be preserved and the name of God would be preserved? Would you not ensure that you put brave men in the city? Is that what you would do? Men who would not be afraid of threats that would come their way. Men who would not buckle under pressure. Men who would be up for the fight. Men who could be relied on in the day of battle. That's what I would do, and I think you would do. If you knew that there was a constant threat of danger, you would ensure that valiant men were put into the city. Men who, having done all in the day of battle, would still stand. I think you would do that. And that's what the people of God did back then. They made sure that valiant men, did you see that word that came up twice in the chapter? They ensured that valiant men inhabited the city to ensure that the city would not collapse under the threat of enemies. And this is how they would ensure that Jerusalem would be preserved at that dangerous time. That's one aspect. But what about this other important aspect of ensuring that the holy city would be a city of holiness? How would you go about that? How would you go about ensuring that Jerusalem would actually live up to its name of being the holy city, as it says in verse 1 and verse 18? Would you not seek to achieve that by getting as many holy people into that city? Those who would shape the spiritual climate of the city. I think you would. That's what I would do anyway. And you'd do that because it's more likely for the city to be a holy city if holiness pervades the city because of the people who are living in it. And that's what the people of God did at that time. The physical walls of Jerusalem had been rebuilt, but now they turned their attention to rebuilding the spiritual ruins of Jerusalem and of shaping the spiritual culture of the city. And in fact, I want to say that's what they wanted to do all along. It wasn't the case that they were physical or practical men and women only, that their main goal was building the walls of Jerusalem. That was not their main goal. Yes, they were called by God to do that, but their main goal was to rebuild the spiritual ruins of Jerusalem. That's why they came back. When Nehemiah was asked by King Artaxerxes why it is that he wants to go back, he said, I think in chapter 1 or 2, that he went to rebuild Jerusalem. And what he meant by that was not simply to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, but to rebuild the spiritual walls of Jerusalem, as it were. And Nehemiah wanted this holy city to be a city of holiness. And the people at that time anyway desired what Nehemiah desired. And so one of the ways they tried to achieve that was ensuring that holy people lived in the city. They wanted holy people to inhabit the city. And so you'll see in a moment the type of people that went to Jerusalem. There were people at this stage anyway who were seeking to be holy, set apart for God's purposes. And I want to say that this speaks so clearly to us today, because there is a great need for valiant Christians. Those who are willing to sacrifice their lives for the cause of God's name. Those who are willing to be holy in the midst of a hostile and perverse world. And so I want to look at this passage under two headings with some application at the end. First of all, the type of people that God uses. And you might think it's the same, but the second point is the kind of people that God uses. The type of people and the kind of people. First, the type of people. I say the type of people because did you notice that there were types of people who were those willing to go back to Jerusalem and to live in it? There were some laymen from the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. You saw that in verse 4. Also in Jerusalem dwelt some of the children of Judah and of the children of Benjamin. These were two tribes of Israel. And then, perhaps more obviously, there were the priests and the Levites and the Nethinim and the descendants of Solomon's servants in verse 3. These are the type of people who would inhabit Jerusalem at that time. These are the type of people who would shape the culture of the city back then. And I want to dwell on a few of the features about these people that stand out. The first was their call upon them to holiness. If you think about the priests, the Levites, the Nethinim, and the descendants of Solomon, they had a holy calling. They had been set apart for a holy task. They each, if you know that and look at 1 Corinthians 9 later, had specific roles to play in the temple. They were set apart for a holy task. They were, as the Bible says, holy to the Lord. And they would all play a significant part in shaping the spiritual culture of the city. Because if you think about it, enter into the times that they lived in, a prominent feature of life back then would be to go up to the temple, as it was back then, and to worship God. And they would be invariably affected by these people that they come in contact with, the priests, the Levites, the Nethinim. Therefore, they had to be holy men. That was their calling. They were called to holiness. Holiness was an important emphasis which was needed in Jerusalem at that time. And I think the people understood that. And that's why so many priests, Levites, and I'll just say so on, first traveled to Jerusalem from Babylon in the first place. If you go all the way back to Ezra chapter 2, you will notice that about 10% of the people that went back were priests, Levites, Nethinim, and so on. I think that's significant. That is a big proportion of the people who returned. Out of about 40,000 people, 4,000 of them or so were priests, Levites, and so on. And I think that's because they knew the importance of setting the spiritual tone of the city. That's why so many of them came back or went there for the first time, to ensure that the city would be holy. But it wasn't just them. It's also encouraging to notice that the laymen, as it were also putting themselves forward to this noble task of ensuring that the holy city actually be a city of holiness. Because it was not just the priests and the Levites who put themselves forward for this task. There were those from the tribes of Judah and Benjamin who also put themselves forward for this task. They too, along with the priests, desired to be holy to the Lord. Remember, they had been amongst the number who had pledged themselves to the Lord in the previous chapter. The chapter before that, they had prayed, confessing their sins and offering themselves forward for the task, whatever God would want to do with them. They had vowed with an oath to walk in God's law and to observe and do all the commandments of God. And they were serious about it. So serious, in fact, that they were willing to move into that city to follow through on their prayer and the pledge that they had made. And what they were saying, these people from the tribes of Benjamin and Judah, was that they too, like the priests and the Levites, wanted to live holy lives. They were saying that they too were wanting to be part of that kingdom of priests and that holy nation rather than just a few holy select few. And so they too put themselves forward to be those who would walk in holiness. And so these two are the type of people that God used at that time. There were the priests and the Levites, and maybe they're the obvious ones. But there were also the tribe of Benjamin and Judah, those who put themselves forward to claim the name of that holy city. And I want to say, in putting themselves forward for that mission, they demonstrated the kind of men that they were. We thought about the type of men, but the kind of men. Because in putting themselves forward, they were showing themselves to be valiant men, brave men, men of substance. They were showing themselves to be men willing to sacrifice their lives for God's glory. Because we see in verses 6 and 14 that they are described as valiant men or men of valor. I want to say that that word valiant needs to be understood in two ways. You might have noticed in verse 6 and 14 that they're used slightly differently or worded slightly differently. Look at verse 6, they are described as valiant men. And then in verse 14, they're described as mighty men of valor. And what we're to understand these two ways of putting it is to understand it of being brave or courageous on the one hand, and yet relatedly also men of substance. First, to be understood in terms of bravery or of being courageous, we have to say and remind ourselves it was a brave thing or a courageous thing to live at Jerusalem at that time. It's hard for us to enter into that, I think. But just remember how many enemies Jerusalem had. Only in Nehemiah chapter 6 we are reminded of the very serious threat that they faced. And throw into the mix, remember the state of Jerusalem at that time. It wasn't heavily fortified, full of people. Nehemiah chapter 7 verse 4 says the city was large and spacious, and there were very few people living in it. And if you know anything about military history, you know that is a vulnerable position to be thinly spread across a relatively large area and thinly spread against enemies all around them. We thought about that. I'm not going to repeat how to the north, south, east and west they had enemies. Sambalat, Tobiah and Geshem, and it says all the rest of the enemies had tried to overrun Jerusalem in chapter 6. And I don't think that threat had just mysteriously gone away. Israel enemies were still out there. And so it would have been an incredibly courageous thing for these people to go back and to live in that vulnerable city. Yes, the walls have been rebuilt, but we know all about warfare, that Jerusalem there, surrounded by enemies, was in a vulnerable position. And that's why they were called mighty men of valor, because they were willing to stick their neck out, to put their name, put their money where their mouth is, not to make this pledge and then go and live elsewhere in a comfortable setting. And that secondly shows us that they were men of substance. Because by choosing to live in Jerusalem, they were demonstrating that they were men of substance. They were men of character. Because we're given the impression from this passage that it would it would have been much easier to live in the surrounding areas of Jerusalem. It would have been much more comfortable to do so. I think that's why they had to implement the drawing of lots in verse 1, because people weren't willing to go back to Jerusalem. And I think we don't need a great imagination to think about that. Just think about living in the countryside and all the things that go along with that in comparison to living in a vulnerable city in the crosshairs of enemies. You can see how easy it would be to live in the countryside in comparison to living in that very prominent and visible city. And what this tells us about the men who were willing to do that along with their families was that they were willing to sacrifice their lives for the sake of God's name and do it willingly. Notice how in verse 2 that the people blessed all the men who willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. They were offering themselves for war, if it meant that. Offering themselves as a freewill offering, if it meant that. This wasn't just patriotism for Israel. It was giving themselves to God. That is what they were doing, putting their life on the line for the name of God. And as we move to application, I want to tell you that the principles for God's people have not changed. God still needs people of valor, people of substance, people who are willing to offer themselves for the cause of the gospel. I'm sure you're fully aware that being a Christian is not easy. If you're a Christian, if you don't know this already, it's a hard path to trod. It's a narrow path and few people find it. And the church, on top of that, has many enemies. It's not just a lonely path to walk. It's a hostile path to walk. We may not come up against enemies who come with physical weapons, but they do come with weapons of a sort. They come with arguments or with mockery and anything else that they can throw at us. And in fact, if you live in certain countries, then it will mean you'll lose your life for being a Christian. And the question that this passage, one of the questions that this passage asks of us is, will you be valiant in the day of battle? In this spiritual war, will you put yourself forward to live in Jerusalem, as it were? To be on the front line, not living in the countryside where it's comfortable. Are you willing to put your head above the parapet in these dangerous times? If you do, don't be surprised if other people who call themselves Christians don't join you there. There will be some who would like to take a back seat. There will be some who are not fully committed, who take the easier route. They may even try to discourage you for the zeal that you show. And I want to tell you this, don't listen to them. Listen to the Lord who calls you to offer yourself a living sacrifice, as it says in Romans 12. The Bible says you are not your own. You're bought at a price. You're not your own. That needs to be said today. You're bought at a price. The world tells you can do whatever you like. And it seeps into the church. But we are not our own to do what we want. We are bought at a price to do what God wants. And the Lord is looking for a valiant people. People who do not flee in the difficult day. I want to emphasize, not a people who are valiant in their own strength, but people who fling themselves upon God, who makes them valiant, as it says in Psalm 60. Through God we will do valiantly, for it is He who shall tread down our enemies. Every Christian who wants to be serious, put it that way, is in a fight, in a war. There is a war going on for your soul. There is a war against the world, the flesh, and the devil. There is a war for holiness going on in your soul. And the question is this: will you be found valiant in those days? Will you put to death the misdeeds of your body? Will you live up to your name as being one of the kingdom of priests, a holy nation? I'm going to speak about that next week more. So this Bible passage is a difficult one. There are many other lessons in it, I am sure. But I want to bring this home to you. Here is a call for Christians to be valiant. We need it more than ever. It is a dangerous time for us. You know, we don't shrink back. We are not afraid of those around us. The devil can only do so much. But we do need to be valiant against the world, the flesh, and the devil. And I want to say, may we be given the grace to do so. May we not be those that shrink back or are half-hearted or look to others to do the hard work. This is a personal call to you to be valiant at this time of war. Well, let us sing in response.